everybody. It is Scorecard. Shane Bacon alongside Johnson Wagner, Patrick McDonald. The days are long, fellas. It is the middle of summer, and Wags, we are embarking on Lynx golf season. I know you're headed out to Scotland here in just a few minutes. I'd say it's the most fun if you're an American golf fan in terms of watching golf, the fact that you could wake up, flip it on TV, and basically get golf on all morning long and maybe sneak out and play in the afternoon.
And it's just so different too, Shane. And balls played along the ground, expect heavy winds most days, get to see a lot of different types of shots and a lot of different breaks. I mean, I remember Sam Burns at the Scottish Open sort of had one embedded into that revetted face a couple years ago. It's, you just see things that you don't normally see week in, week out on the PGA Tour.
Patrick, before we get deep into Lynx golf talk, we'll get into that a little later in the show. I do want to touch on Chris Goddard because he picked up another victory, did his stuff he does on Sundays. I mean, you think about the way Goddard has played final rounds on his way to victory this season and throughout his very short professional career. I mean, a 62 on Sunday to steal the deer from a host of names that looked like they'd have a chance to either pick up their first PGA Tour win or their first PGA Tour win in a while. And then all of a sudden, Goddard just kind of sneaks out there and steals it. I mean, this guy's becoming top five in terms of who you're most scared of on a Sunday when he starts making birdies.
Yeah, I think he's inching towards that way. I think what's been impressive about this win, obviously the 62 on Sunday is going to make the headliner, but I thought him talking after the performance, he's mentioned that his bad has gotten a lot better. And I think that's really what's been the difference for Goddard, is when he's been off, he's been able to keep himself in this tournament. He said on Sunday that he didn't necessarily think he had a chance on the first tee, just wanted to get off to a good start, and obviously did. And then you blink and lo and behold, he has five wins on the PGA Tour, four in the last calendar year, tying Scottie Scheffler for the most over that span. And you want to talk about players in their 20s. He's the youngest guy inside the top 10 in the OWGR. He's the second youngest inside the top 20 behind only Ludwig. He's only a few months younger than him. And so you kind of have to start talking about this guy in the Cameron Young stage, in the Ludwig Oberg. And coincidentally, he has as many wins as those two players combined. But when we go to the Open next week, he's certainly atop the list of players who can easily knock off their first major wins. But I've been impressed most, Shane, with the off days, because I think that's really how the elite players separate themselves from the rest of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, Wags, you look at the wins. I love looking at kind of margin of victory from players. We've talked a lot about that with Scottie Scheffler in his career, how much he wins by, but also the Sunday finishes. I mean, he wins his first event in Myrtle Beach by six, a couple of two-shot victories at the Scottish and the Sony. The Sony obviously shoots 64 in the final round, 64 in the final round in Phoenix, and a 62 here. Whether he's blowing the field out on a relatively easy golf course or get it done on Sunday with great play, I mean, I love the way he kind of brings different level of games to these five wins to get it done.
And when you look at the variety of different golf courses he's won at, it's incredible. Certainly his game translates to pretty much anywhere he's going to play anywhere in the world. And I had the pleasure of walking with him Sunday. I was pushing our producer Jim Rickoff before going on air. It's like, I got to go with Goddard. And he's like, I think I'm going to stick you with the Super Group, the second to last. I think you're going to get on air more. And I'm like, okay. And as soon as we come on air, he birdies 10, birdies 12, birdies or 10, 13, 14. And finally, Jim's like, all right, go meet him on 15. So I get to 15, I almost cooled him off. He only made one birdie from there on in. But look, he blew me away with the touch on 15 from over the back of the green. And then 17 tee shot for a guy that fades the ball. It was into the wind, not very comfortable. He sent this thing to the moon up and over the left trees and cut it back into the right side of the fairway. And then turn around on 18, which fits his eye great. He hits this little stinger bullet cut that goes 340 yards down there. I think his ability to hit different sort of trajectories with his irons, with his driver, with his wedges is why he's so good at so many different venues.
Patrick, I was thinking, you know, there was a time, let's call it 10, 15 years ago. I mean, late 90s, early 2000s, a big talking point in golf was best player without a major victory, right? And it feels like that's kind of gone away. I feel like people care a little less about that. Maybe it's because the marquee names aren't quite there. I think Xander was there for a long time, obviously, you know, checking that box twice a couple of years ago. Feels like Goddard is probably a top three, top four name, considering the resume to this point, that doesn't have a major win. Obviously, you can throw Tommy Fleetwood on that list. Ludwig is there as well. But, I mean, does Goddard, in this quick year-and-a-half run of winning a lot of times on the PGA Tour. Has he now worked himself into maybe that top five of the players you'd expect to pick up that next major victory?
Yeah, I think you got to. I mean, he's up to world number seven right now. I think the only thing going against that narrative is we just haven't seen him in too many major championships, right? This was his first year playing at Augusta National. He's made the cut in all three major championships this season. Obviously, he had a good start at the Open last year, a distant podium result, but I think it'd be Goddard, Ludwig, Cam Young, Victor Hovland still I would throw in that mix, and Tommy Fleetwood. But with Fleetwood and Hovland and Young, what's different is they've been in the thick of it late in a major championship. Same with Ludwig as well. I know Goddard had that good finish last year at the Open, but like true contention on a back nine on Sunday, not 10 strokes behind Scottie Scheffler, who was running away with that tournament. I think that's the next step for him, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens next week.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he understands that level of golf, and we saw him play so good at the Scottish last year, and then obviously rolling that into great play at the Open Championship. Wags, you know, as someone that, you know, went through different kind of phases of a professional golf career when you were playing PGA Tour golf, when you see young guys do this, I mean, you think about Ricky coming out of the gate nearly winning his first start as a pro, losing in that playoff in Phoenix. When you see the young guns show up and show this level of patience and composure, what does it do to the veterans when they kind of look over their shoulder and see a Chris Goddard that now has five quick victories?
It has them starting to look towards that Challenger series is what it does, because there's going to be less and less spots out there. It's tough. I mean, when you look at a guy like Goddard, who has the, you know, elite level length, he's got great iron play, great wedge play, and he has a great short game too. It's like, man, what do I have to do to contend with a guy like this as a 45-year-old? What's a 45-year-old? How can he compete with Goddard? He's got to hope that guy's going to make mistakes, and they just keep coming and coming. These young guns are they're here to stay, and they're going to be taken over. It's a young man's game now, Shane. You don't have to pay your dues anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the late 40 guys seem to be popping, and the youngsters are obviously doing well. Goddard up, I believe, turns 27 in a couple of weeks, which will be interesting to see. But yeah, really the story, now two top 10s in majors, always something to kind of keep an eye on and picking up the victory when it didn't seem like he really had a chance. Somebody that also didn't look like they'd have a chance, Patrick, late on a Sunday, Max Homa, a name that we have not talked a lot about on this show over the last couple of years after the great play, you know, for Max Homa for maybe a year and a half, 2 year run there a few years back. It was nice to see Max kind of pop. And I know you and I talked about Max on Sunday. The swing looks better. The confidence seems to be following as well. And it looked like he was going to make it a real run on Sunday. But I think golf fans got to be fired up to see Max Homa just have a nice result, first top 10 of the season after the Masters.
It just seems like the last month or two or so, he's been a much better headspace, obviously, off Twitter, which is healthy for everyone, not only Max Homa. But you saw the finishes start to materialize a little bit, a couple top 25 finishes, almost qualified for the U.S. Open in Canada, fell in a playoff for the second straight year in final qualifying, and then took some time off, which I thought was probably a prudent play for him, knowing that was a disappointing result for him. And he comes off firing. I loved the aggressiveness coming down the stretch. He was trying to win that golf tournament. He ran that one by on 16, ran it by on 18 as well, trying to give himself a chance. And I think with Homa, you talk about the swing and switching to Mark Blackburn and that being in a better spot. For me, it's always what's going on in between the years with him. And if he's calm and accepting on the golf course, which I think he was this weekend, you get the results that we saw at the John Deere Classic for the second straight year, which, you know, he almost won this golf tournament a season ago as well.
Wags flying coach too, and you know, protecting the air up there. I mean, the friendly skies for Max Homa.
Protecting, you know, the air.
He's carbon tax the exit row and making sure everybody's safe. Honestly, I mean, this was kind of, you think about the personality of Max Homa in terms of social media. Obviously, he was a big Twitter guy back in the day, to Patrick's point, hadn't been on in a couple of years. But I feel like when Max is having the most fun away from the golf course, it seems to translate the best on the golf course, and he feels more comfortable right now, it feels like, as a pro golfer.
I think so, and I think he can probably take a little bit of a page out of Wyndham Clark's book. I mean, Wyndham Clark was kind of in the depths, and then maybe not quite as low as Max has gotten the last couple of years, but to see Wyndham bounce back the way he has after struggling so publicly, both emotionally and with his play, I mean, hey, if if Wyndham can do it, why can't I? And Max has climbed from the cellar before. It's great to see. I thought after the John Deere Classic last year, we were going to see a little bit more consistency, but maybe it's this time around because he's playing in Louisville, Kentucky in the alternate field event this week. It'd be a good time for him to go pick off a win and get back into the top 70 category and get into these signature events where I think we all feel like he belongs.
Patrick, what's the longest break you've taken from Twitter yourself? I mean, have you gone a month away?
Oh, yeah. I would say I probably fired up my account in my cubicle at the United States Postal Service a la 2019 when I was working for Deloitte. And I went a week or so without at one point. I was out of the country. Wags, I had no access to Wi-Fi.
Wags, are you like a Twitter app guy on your phone, or are you like an occasional check it on your computer guy?
Occasionally on the computer. I've had it on my app, and back at the start of fantasy football season in September, I stupidly signed into my account thinking some email, and I got my account hacked. So I was off of Twitter for, I think, 6 months until I got it back, and it was very refreshing.
You owe me some cash, Wags. I bought your crypto coin and everything from that account.
Man, just nothing like a good crypto hacking for Twitter. My son's obsessed with hackers right now. And so anytime he hears the word, he's like, oh. He thinks hackers are the worst humans on the planet, by the way. He's like the most scared of hackers. I'm like, I think we're going to be okay as of now, especially if it's just a crypto hack on Wags' Twitter. But enough from Goddard up, enough from the John Deere. We'll take a break, talk a little bit more Lynx Golf, what we're most excited about. And then we want to do a top five power ranking of who needs the final major of 2026 the most. I'm assuming we'll have similar names on that list. I'm assuming we'll see some LIV names on that list, but plenty more on Scorecard here after the break. Back here on Scorecard, a lot to dive into. Obviously, we got Lynx season upcoming, Scottish Open this week, Open Championship next week. Patrick, I mean, Lynx Golf is just kind of a different beast. It feels like the French Open on the golf side of things, where it's the lone major we get that really kind of tests different skill sets, it feels like. I mean, obviously, Wynn can pick up at U.S. Opens. Augusta can play tough at certain times. But this one feels like the outlier. And obviously, getting a chance to warm up. I do want to ask both of you guys, and I'll start with you, Patrick. What do you get most excited about when we kind of flip the calendar to July, knowing that the Lynx Golf run is upon us?
Oh, just one thing? That's tough. I will say you kind of alluded to it early. You watch early in the day, and then you got the afternoon to golf yourself. I think that's one of the best parts of it from a viewing perspective. I love when it's the start of the Open and there's so much rain on the camera, you have no idea who's playing. That's kind of like the official start to an Open, in my opinion, where the cameraman has to wipe off the lens. But I think Johnson touched on it perfectly. Just the variety of shots, playing the ground game, a la Iowa football, ground and pound sometimes when you have to, and some of the rub of the green that these guys are going to get. There's going to be bad breaks. You're going to have to chip out of a bunker and get back into play, try to make one of those vintage major championship pars. There could be a massive wave advantage. Not quite like, you know, we saw at the U.S. Open, which was, you know, maybe a little manufactured or not. What, we don't have to go back there. But just all those variables, I think, you get at the Open Championship that you don't see on a week-to-week basis on the PGA Tour.
Wags, I get excited for the courses that the players play that aren't the championship courses that week. I always find that part of this kind of lead up before the Open and before the Scottish always fun. North Berwick seems to be a popular pick for the players. Just popping over and playing some different level of golf. Like, you forget that golfers, even if they're pro golfers, enjoy playing golf, right? At places they haven't played before. I think sometimes we sleep on that. I also like just saying renaissance. You know, it's just a word we don't typically say on this side of the pond. But, I mean, it's a unique level of golf that these guys get to tackle.
Well, there's so many great places to play on the East Lothian Peninsula over there. You've got Going Number One that had the Scottish Open for years. Muirfield, you mentioned North Berwick, Dunbar, Luffness, Archerfield Lynx. It's like this little mecca. I know St. Andrews gets all the publicity and up near Carnoustie, but this is one of the coolest little spots for golf. And I'm planning on playing a bunch of it myself over there, Shane. And what I'm most looking forward to watching, I love pot bunkers. I love what can happen. I love the awkward stance. At one time at Muirfield in the 13 Open, I had to hit a putter backwards just to get it away from the face so I could get the next one on. So I'm a glutton for punishment, and I want to see some crazy things that happen.
Yeah, you know, I got out of college and caddied at St. Andrews for a summer back in 2006. The worst possible situation for a player that you're caddying for, you know, an average Joe golfer, was if they hit it in the front of one of those enormous Scotland bunkers. Not the paw bunkers, but if they hit it in like shell bunker or hell bunker, and they hit it in one of those, and you're like, it's going to take seven shots for this guy to get out. He's just going to hit it 4 yards. And you're going to be raking for 15 minutes. And all of a sudden you're going to yell at by the guy kind of patrolling the golf course there at the old course. But bunkering always fun. Win always fun. Where are you playing, Wags? Do you have a tee time lined up to this point?
Oh, I got a lot of tee times. My son's coming over with me. We're playing Golan number one when we land tomorrow. Playing North Berwick on Thursday, Muirfield Friday, and then my brother and a couple other buddies and their sons are coming, and we're going up to Nairn, Dornoch, Brora, and Castle Stewart the week after. So I've got a big run of golf, and I just can't wait. Like it's the kind of golf that you get to the 15th hole and you're like, oh shoot, we have four holes. We only have four holes left. You just never want the day to end. And fortunately, it stays light pretty late over there, so I'll be playing a lot of golf into the gloaming.
It doesn't really get dark. Like northern Scotland in the summer, I believe it's the same latitude as Anchorage, Alaska. That's how north Scotland is. And I mean, you like when you lived over there in the summer, I mean, you played till 11:30 and be pretty much good to go. It gets kind of midnight bluey, but doesn't totally get dark. As you're headed up to the northern part of Scotland to play those courses like Nairn, Fraserburgh is a golf course on the way that is absolutely worth a stop if you guys have like a morning or afternoon, you're taking the coach up that way. I think it's the seventh oldest golf course in the world. I'll text it to you. I'll tell you. You're going to misspell that so badly. I'll send it to you via text. There's no way you're accomplishing that correctly. Patrick, is there a golfer you feel like, we'll get to picks in a bit for this week, but is there a golfer you feel like is kind of trending in a good direction to have kind of a Goddard-up run from last year?
Someone I'm looking at for kind of these next couple of weeks is Matt Fitzpatrick, just given how well he's played this entire season. And I think the driver went awry for a month or so leading up into the U.S. Open, but he put a new ping in the bag, Shane. He put your boys in the bag. He got rid of the Titleist, and he drove the ball great at TPC River Highlands. And that was kind of the missing link this past month, and we saw some really good play returning. So he's been close at this golf tournament. I think he lost in a playoff to Minwoo Lee when it was just on the European circuit. I think Thomas Dietrich was also in that playoff as well many moons ago. And then, of course, a major championship, I think, would really just polish off what has been an incredible year and kind of lock him up as the third best player in the world, which I think he is right now anyways.
Wags, you got anybody you're kind of focused on?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Fitzpatrick obviously is a great name, but I wouldn't say coming out of the woods like a Goddard-up did last year. But I would say for someone who's been playing some great golf and hasn't won in a long time, Sam Burns. I think Sam Burns is ready to explode and probably pick off two wins by the end of this year and put himself back into the top 10 in the world and just a stalwart on President's Cups and Ryder Cup teams. Playing some good golf right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fun run. I mean, obviously, getting an opportunity to see, you know, the weekend golf at the Scottish Open on CBS. Wag's going to be out there walking when he's not playing. And then obviously the Open Championship at Birkdale the next week. The run is epic. We're excited about it. We're going to take a break, and we're going to give out the five names, maybe not trending in the right direction, but the five guys that need this final major of the year the most. I mean, we used to have the PGA Championship in August and September. Now that's not the case. So the Open Championship is when things wrap up. So one left for the men. We'll dive into that after the break. Back here on Scorecard, I mean, got one eye on the World Cup. We're getting World Cup updates in our ear during the show. Can I say something to you guys before we get into the topic here? Been watching a lot of World Cup and a lot of Wimbledon. I'm sure you guys have been in the same boat. Some tour, whether it be the Korn Ferry Tour or the LPGA Tour or whomever, the fact that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday doesn't have live golf, and the fact that this stuff's on TV all during the week and everybody watches it, it feels like those are days a golf tour could, in theory, kind of operate within and give people something to watch. Wags, is that a crazy idea?
No, I think it's probably a really good idea for the Korn Ferry Tour. I know they do it when they go down to those Bahamas events, Shane.
Yeah,
I don't know if y'all cover those. So, I mean, it makes sense. And from a PGA Tour perspective, you lose so many fans from the weekend. But I think it makes a lot of sense for Korn Ferry to finish on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I think if you could, the thing I've thought about with the weekend is you could, I think you could do Saturday and Sunday first two rounds, end on a Tuesday, and then you get the weekend in terms of fans wanting to come out. You also could present the weekend as everybody in the field's going to be there. You know, no cut made yet. So if a kid wanted to watch Blades Brown and they only have Saturday to watch the golf, they in theory could get out there and see their quote unquote favorite player. But just an idea. Like I said, all I do is watch this World Cup in Wimbledon on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I'm like, golf feels like it could probably operate in this world. We're going to operate in a world of the five golfers that need the final men's major of the year the most. Patrick, there are a lot of guys that either haven't won a major this year, or haven't won a major in a while, or have never won a major in their career. I'm going to let you kick us off in terms of the five guys you feel like need this final major of the year the most.
Well, I have this guy starred in particular because he's about to turn 46 and he's continuing to play great golf in major championships. It's Justin
Rose.
Got
him as well.
I think he's got to be number one, just knowing how great he's playing, knowing that Father Time is around the corner, and knowing that this is a great opportunity for him. And I think outside of a Masters, which he obviously wants, I'm sure he'd put a claret jug right there next to it. And he just seems like a two-time major champion, if not more, just given the number of close calls that he's had. And he's in form, playing some good golf, playing confident, has the irons all figured out after that pit stop in Miami. So I'm going to go with Rosie as my top guy who needs this Open Championship.
So are you reverse going? What are you doing here, Patrick? You going to go 1-5 or 5-1?
Oh, okay. We want all of them? Yeah, I'll go 1-5. So I guess that kind of takes out there wasn't really an order. I just picked five guys who
we
all
never,
needed them.
To be fair, we never have an order. We rarely have one.
It's more like Justin Rose is one, and then the rest of these guys, you can fill in 2 through 5. Any order you want, so I look the best. Number two, I put Tommy Fleetwood. Seems like every time we go to the Open, it's in his hometown somehow. I'm not quite sure how the municipalities work over there, but it seems like it's one of those situations again for Tommy Fleetwood, so pumped about him. Ludvig Åberg and Cam Young kind of put in the young guys best without a major championship, perhaps. And for someone like Young in particular, just having a great season like he is, it seems like a major championship should be in there. You could say the Players' Championship is obviously close to that stature. And then I put Victor Hovland in there as well, someone who we saw alongside Colin Morikawa coming out of college. Morikawa has two. Hovland has had a number of close calls, mainly in the PGA Championship, but was right there at the 150th Open at St. Andrews, the 54-hole leader, and someone who can get streaky. So it seems like he's in a really good run of form coming off that win at the Travelers.
Yeah, final pairing alongside Rory at St. Andrews, and did not show up after a great, I think, opening. I think he birdied the first hole, and that was kind of the only true highlight from Victor there at the Old Course. Wags, you can go either way. You can go 1-5, 5-1, 50-1. I don't care which way you go.
I had Fleetwood and Young as well on my list. So I agree with you there, Patrick. I've got John Rahm. He's fifth on my list. I just feel like he really hasn't done a whole lot other than the Quail Hollow PGA Championship, where he sort of gassed down at the end. But he had to go gunslinging on the green mile. I think John Rahm needs a big week. I've got Xander Schauffele. I mean, after winning two majors in 2024, I thought the sky was the limit. I thought he was going to take over world number one. Hasn't won since, so he needs just to win anything, much less a major. And then I've got Scottie Scheffler. I mean, he's world number one. He's the most dominant player we've seen since Tiger Woods. I'm sure if he was honest, he'd say it's been a disappointing year. He's only got that one win. I know he put a lot of pressure on himself for Shinnecock, even though he said he didn't. Obviously, he's had a bunch of good finishes in major championships, but I think he needs a win pretty bad.
You know, Xander and Patrick Cantlay kind of get teamed up a lot together, whether it be in a team event or just kind of their buddies and their friendships. But Patrick Cantlay's become one of those players you don't talk that much about. Xander, sadly, is kind of creeping into that world as well. Johnson, I didn't even think about him for my list, but I think it's a fair name to put in the top five. I got Rory at five just because I haven't felt like we've seen much of an engaged Rory this season. It's felt a little like last season, right, where he wins the Masters and the game kind of disappears. The difference in last year and this year is he knew he had to find form late in the year because they had a Ryder Cup. This year, obviously, no Ryder Cup for Rory. But I think if you're Rory and you're looking at goals going forward, kind of doubling up on the majors in terms of like the double slam in your career is at least something to circle. So it needs another open to do that. I got Rose at 4. Everything you said, Patrick, I think is spot on. I got Scotty at 3. Just feels like these missed major years when you're in your prime of primes is something you don't want to do. You don't want to go through the season without a major win. I got Fleetwood at 2, and I got Rahm at 1. I mean, we're talking 3 full seasons without a major win if Rahm doesn't pick up this Open Championship, 14 straight majors. I don't think he's going to win, but I think he needs to win. I think he just needs to feel himself in contention. You mentioned the PGA last year. Kind of felt like he put his toe in the water for a moment, and then Scotty was like, no chance, dude. You're not good enough to hang with me. And it feels like right now, all John Rahm does is make highlights for all the stuff that isn't his golf game. So John Rahm just getting in the contention and bucking a bit would be nice. And Patrick, I think you hit on a few names, maybe those guys that don't have a major win that could use one, the Vicks, the Cam Youngs, the Goddard-ups, that group of player that would it would be cool if they joined the party, if you will.
And it kind of seems like it's ripe for it. I mean, we saw Aaron Rye win. We saw Wyndham Clark come from the depths and win his second major championship. It seems like the game, more than the last handful of years, is open for a potential first-time major winner. And so I think it's a prime opportunity for Ludd, even Fleetwood, the hometown kid. How could you not root for him? And hopefully he doesn't put too much pressure on him. I will say for Rahm, he was in with a great chance at Aronimake as well before Aaron Rye kind of blitzed the field down the stretch on the back nine. But I'm with you, especially coming off that U.S. Open where he was looking good and then 5 holes and boom, he's gone. No weekend tee time. He's in the city with Bryson. So, I think Rahm's definitely up there too.
You know, and Wags, Patrick mentioned Bryson. I mean, this would be a name that when we do this typically, I feel like he'd be on everybody's list because of the drought and the fact that the lone major he's won a couple of times is a U.S. Open. His name crossed my mind, but I mean, I didn't even think about putting, you know, pen to paper in terms of Bryson, just because I don't necessarily think he has a legitimate chance to win any major right now, especially, you know, an Open Championship with Lynx Golf and the fact that you've got to play a level of creative golf that doesn't seem to fit who Bryson is right now as a pro golfer.
Yeah, I was going to mention Bryson because he doesn't need to win this next major. He needs to make a cut. He's been terrible. I mean, it's been absolutely atrocious. And the only time he's really played well at an Open Championship in recent years is last year, and it was just the last 3 rounds when the wind died down. Like, he is not built for the Open Championship. I would say there's a much better – I'm not an odds maker, but I would say there's a much better chance of him missing the cut at Royal Birkdale than there is him even just making the cut.
Yeah, it just feels like that's kind of where we sit right now with Bryson. It is really interesting, by the way, with Bryson. It does feel like Brad Dahlke's kind of taken the spot that Bryson owned for a while, where it's like, you're a YouTube golfer that also has this ability to play exceptional golf as a pro, and Dahlke on the European Tour last week, like, bucked for a couple of rounds. Like, this guy's got serious game. I know he spends a lot of the time playing YouTube golf, but the fact that he's able to kind of throw it out there at the pros, I know he didn't finish as strong as he wanted, but I was paying attention, Pat. Patrick, I wanted to see what Dahlke did.
What was he, the 36-hole leader?
I think he was a couple of shots back.
A bad weekend. Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it's impressive.
Didn't play great on the weekend.
The thing with Bryson, though, he's just out of sight, out of mind, because LIV Golf doesn't have an event. That's why you see Rahm and Hatton, all those guys playing this week at the Scottish Open, because Louisiana got canceled a couple months ago. And, you know, it's funny. Bryson made that 30-minute YouTube video of him kind of going shot by shot at the U.S. Open, where it went wrong. He was lamenting that everyone called him one of the best major competitors last year, but a year difference, and now he's one of the worst. It's like, okay, yeah, you missed 3 straight cuts. That's kind of how it works. And the guy behind the camera asked him, he's like, is your content creation, you know, distracting you at all? And he's like, no. But the fact that the guy asked that question kind of gave you your answer, I felt like.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of Bryson's boys, and he's asking that level of question. I think it's a great point. And I mean, you know, like, to the Bryson question of, I played so good last year and now people are counting me out, we're doing it to Scottie Scheffler as well. That's what happens in sport, is if you haven't performed or shown up or taken home a trophy in a number of weeks or months or years, if you're Bryson DeChambeau, we're going to ask the right questions, or at least going to ask the questions. Maybe they're not the ones you want to hear, but they are, in fact, questions that get asked around sport. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to dive a little deeper into the renaissance the Scottish Open, Wag's flight, making sure he can make that 30-minute kind of a window he has in Atlanta. And we'll give out our picks, all that coming up next on Scorecard. Back around Scorecard, going to dive into the Scottish first. Wags, I got to tell you, I played an alt shot event earlier this week, and maybe the two worst putts I've been a part of in my life. My buddy Ryan on 13, 20 feet up the hill, perfect putt for a righty, you know, just kind of breaking with the slope. He pulled it 7 feet left. I somehow wiggled that in. The next hole, I have a birdie putt up the hill, and I hit it like 8 feet by, and it was straight down a slope. And I've decided that I think the worst thing to do in golf is when you do something like that in alt shot for your partner, like leaving him a putt when he didn't even think he'd have to putt, when he thought you just obviously either give it a chance to go in or leave it stone dead. And when you do something like that and leave them out to dry, alt shot can make two people dislike each other quickly.
Very quickly. My only experience in competitive golf was in New Orleans at the Zurich Classic, and I had four different partners every year, so I clearly wasn't a very good alt shot partner. But it was it's some of the most nerve-wracking competitive golf you can play, Shane.
I find team golf, I play my worst. I feel like I play way worse when I've got to play alongside a partner, just because it's such a different way to go about your business. I was thinking, if there's pro golfers like that, it feels like Koepka's a little like that in terms of he doesn't quite play his best golf as a teammate versus when he's playing alone golf. Patrick, are there guys that kind of come to mind that you feel like as a pro just kind of can't really handle the team environment?
Like every American ever, based on the run of results there in the Ryder Cup. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you could say
extremely fair point.
The European players, I think the other perspective is, oh, I've got someone behind me to back me up. I can just freewheel this. And I think that's the European perspective. That's why you see Bobby McIntyre and Seb Straka just dusting Americans in these Ryder Cups. But I think you see Tiger and Phil obviously didn't have good runs in the Ryder Cup. Scottie Scheffler was brutal this past Ryder Cup too. Didn't win a match as a part of a team. So plenty of Americans to choose from, Shane.
Yeah, every American player, every international player on the President's Cup side. I do think it's unfair when a captain gets named in terms of American captains and people bring up the Ryder Cup record. You want to be like, dude, everybody in the last 25 years on the American side has a bad Ryder Cup record. Like, you can't do this to just kind of pick out Jim Furyk's name or a Stuart Sink. It's like everybody kind of has lost because we lose a lot on the Ryder Cup. What we will not be losing is getting to watch golf this week with the Scottish preview. Producer Josh through this in the rundown, and I love this. He said the closest thing we've had to a classic PGA Tour field since the creation of LIV. We got Rahm, Manhattan, Lori Cantor's in the field, McKibben's there, Victor Perez, then obviously we've got the likes of Scotty and Rory. You know, typically this stuff's majors only, right, Patrick, when you get everybody in the same field, but the fact that we get this back-to-back weeks is pretty exciting.
Lori Cantor, the one who earned his PGA Tour card after serving the 1 year suspension, and then he was like, actually, I want to go back to live again. You had Victor Perez. I think he was in the mix during the FedEx Cup fall, and he was like, this is too tough for me. Don't know if I'm going to get my card. I want to become a clique. And you forgot the biggest name, perhaps, Patrick Reed, back in the mix too, Shane. A little disappointed that he's playing on the DP World Tour again. I was hoping his summer would just be Masters, PGA, US Open, and Open Championship before his return to the PGA Tour, but unfortunately not. But yeah, the band's back together. It's going to be good to see Rahm and Hatton in a big field like this and possibly contend. And then the Renaissance Club made some changes too with the routing. A little inside baseball for you, Wags, before you get out there. They changed 8, 9, 17, and 18 are the same, and then they just flipped the 9s, is my understanding. Is that correct?
It is what is originally the back 9. It plays out on the coast, and it's hard for spectators to get out there. So the finishing stretch is going to be really condensed around the clubhouse. I think it's going to be incredible for crowds. I think the environment is going to be way more exciting and a lot louder. It's going to be a nice finish to this tournament.
Wags, have you been out to this course before? Have you seen the Renaissance in person?
No, I haven't. I played the Open in 13 at Muirfield, and I know my brother and caddy went out and played there one afternoon late. I have not seen it. I worked Golf Central a few years ago, so I mean, I've watched the tournament, but I'm excited maybe Friday or Thursday before my round at North Berwick, I'm going to go take a nice little walk.
What's kind of the process? I mean, obviously, when you play a golf course as a participant, I mean, you play practice rounds to get a lay of the land. What do you do differently or even similarly in terms of scouting a golf course for a walking reporter job?
I like to pick out holes that potentially wouldn't be drivers off the tee. I can pretty much do that through a yardage book. They're so good these days. But getting out there on the golf course, and you know as well as anybody, Lynx golf, when the wind switches, what could have been a driver and a 4-iron into a par 4 one day, when it switches, could be a 3-iron and a wedge. So getting out there, feeling what the golf course is, probably taking a good look at a bunch of the bunkers that I think could come into play, and just general slopes on the greens. I mean, I'm not going to go out there on Thursday when play's going on and start rolling balls, but at Aronimink for the PGA, I hadn't seen that venue in a number of years. So I got out there, had some golf balls, rolled them on the greens, and just tried to get a general vibe of the fast, the speed of the greens and the pitch of them.
Wags, besides scorecard on YouTube that you're going to download, I'm sure, right when the show ends, what do you got set for the flight? What are we consuming on the flight?
I've got a show downloaded. It's I Will Find You on Netflix. I've been hearing a lot of people talking about this show. I watched the first episode on the way back from the deer on Monday, and it immediately hooked me. So I'm going to get into that tonight.
Patrick did not like that.
I don't know. What is it even about? It sounds like a stalker show or
this
something
guy,
along those lines.
This guy goes to prison for murdering his young child, but he never did it, was found guilty. And then now the kid is maybe alive. I don't know. And his former sister-in-law is trying to help him get out to find the kid. So, yeah, it seems like it's like a thriller.
Okay. I think on the back end of this show, we should just do movie and TV reviews with Johnson Wagner. I feel like that might be the
I'm game
for calling for our
Project show. Hail Mary, Wags. That's no free golf. Recently.
Neighbors, Friends with Neighbors, or whatever the John Hamm show was excellent. A lot of fun diving into that one as well. Yeah, maybe in the winter. Maybe we can convince our bosses to allow us to do that. All right, we'll take a break. We got picks upcoming. How'd you guys do last week on picks, by the way? Who'd you go with?
I think we both picked Gotterup. It was unbelievable. A consensus play out of the two of us.
That's so cool. I'm so proud of you guys. Yeah. I know you're thinking Jackson Suver, but I like the fact that you guys both picked the winner. It feels like anytime I'm not here, you guys pick the winner. So we'll give out who's going to win, who's not going to win, and who we think is going to be in contention when we get back. All right, it's the time of the show where we give out our picks, and they always win. They never lose. That's kind of how the show goes. For a long time, we were fading the guys that would win, and then we flipped the script on that. And we just – I mean, we're not a gambling show, but I'm starting to think people should probably be following the lead. We'll start with who's not going to win, Wags. Who do you feel like is not winning this week in Scotland?
Jordan Spieth, I mean, making tons of birdies at the John Deere Classic. I just the mistakes are going to get – magnified on Lynx Golf. Jordan Spieth's definitely not winning. Also, Justin Thomas. Just haven't seen him anywhere near it.
No.
And I'm putting Wyndham Clark back on my list this
Come
week, guys.
On.
I think he's not a great Lynx golfer. I know he played really well at Shinnecock in the wind, and that's kind of a Lynx-y environment, but I just don't see him doing it. I'm not doing it to be mean or malicious. I don't think Wyndham Clark's going to have a chance this week.
Okay, no Wyndham Clark. Patrick, are you following the lead in terms of Wags who's not winning?
Yeah, I mean, I loved the Spieth one, and I'm also going to just put Burns and Justin Rose on that list just because they're not in the field alongside Jordan Spieth. And then I'm also going to pick Patrick Reed, unfortunately, upset about that. Patrick Cantlay, not going to win. We mentioned him momentarily. And then John Rahm, I think it's going to be a big ask for him to win this week.
Yeah, I went with the three favorites. I went Rory, Scotty, Rahm is who I don't think is going to win. I just, again, I don't think Rahm's playing the level of golf to win golf tournaments right now. I'm assuming Scotty and Rory's focus is probably the week after. Who knows? They can obviously get themselves in contention. I'm sure Scotty will finish third, which he does, it feels like, every single week. But I don't think he's taking home the trophy. It would be very strange, Patrick, if we finish the season and the only win Scotty has is the first one. Like, and there's a real bizarre chance that could happen.
Let's see what happens post 3M Open, okay? I'm not going to press the panic button until we get through that tournament.
Yeah. You're always a post 3M panic button guy. I know that's kind of how exactly you operate. Wags, who is winning? Who do you feel like could win?
Well, I'm pretty embarrassed I said Spieth. I guess I've been more focused on packing my bag and getting my golf trip ready than looking at the field. Well, I'm hoping that they're in the field this week. I've got Bobby Mack, won here 2 years ago. Means a lot to him. I've got Sam Burns. Is Sam Burns in the field? Is that what you said?
No. So no Sam Burns. I think baby number two is coming soon.
I'll take Sam Burns off. And Tyrrell Hatton, I mean, look at his career at the Dunhill Links. He's a great links golfer. So I think Tyrrell Hatton, and he's my pick for the week.
I've done that a couple times, Wise, if it makes you feel any better. Pick somebody that's not playing that
week.
It's
a smart play.
I mean, for can't win, it's a great play.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's 100% they're not winning. Like, Tiger's not winning this week. Like,
play the percentages.
Yeah, I'm telling you, not taking home the victory. Nelly Korda not winning this week at the Scottish Open. That is happening. Who you got, Patrick? Who do you think's winning?
I got Alex Fitzpatrick. I got Chris Gotti as well. Chris Goddard, think he can win two in a row. Xander Schauffele also put in the mix to another Scottish Open winner. And I was looking at the odds. I was going, speaking of us being a gambling podcast, and I had Xander winning this, and then I was like, why is Matt Fitzpatrick with a longer number than Xander Schauffele right now? I don't know what's going on there. And I picked Matt Fitzpatrick to win this golf tournament just with how well he's playing and with the driver under control again. I'd be very surprised if he's not at least in with a chance come Sunday.
Feels like a Hatton week. Just feels like Tyrrell Hatton plays well in like the week before major kind of things with big field. So I got Hatton on my can win list. I got Hovland there as well. I know you picked Hovland not to win, Johnson, but I think Hovland's got an opportunity. Ludvig is my official pick. And again, kind of need to start to see Ludvig win golf tournaments. I mean, we're talking about Goddard to start the show, picking up his fifth victory. Ludvig was the guy out of college, polished, ready to go, and kind of expecting big things. And Patrick, it's one thing to have a chance to win golf tournaments, and it's another thing to win golf tournaments. And Ludvig right now is kind of inching himself in that Michelle Wee world where they're very fun to watch play. They hit it great. People love watching them on the range, but you got to take home trophies if you want to have that beautiful trophy room like Justin Rose has.
Yeah, you know, we still call him a kid, even though he's been on the PGA Tour for a number of years. He's about to be 27 and all that, but I think it's time to graduate this guy as a man and someone who needs to win golf tournaments like you mentioned there, Shane.
And we talked so much about the Lynx golf season. I think something we didn't mention or we didn't point out, I love watching the golfers go to Wimbledon. I don't know why, but I love seeing suited up pro golfers, there, and they all take the picture and they all kind of take it in. I know Ludvig was a part of that yesterday, and I'm assuming all the other boys will be involved as well. But yeah, I mean, it's here. Like I said, Wag's got a flight soon. Patrick, you got any golf upcoming in your world or just working?
Yeah, I'm playing 54 holes this weekend, actually. Going back home, sister's getting married in a couple months, so we're doing some wedding festivities for her. And well, the girls are, and then the guys are going to be playing golf the way it should be. So got 54, so matching the yearly total more or less up to this point. Took June off, got away from the game, refreshed the mind, coming in with a whole new perspective. And July's going to be my month, guys.
Well, I mean, this weekend is going to be your month, apparently.
Yes.
I know Wags has got golf upcoming as well. I got a couple of rounds this week, and then I'm going to put them away and get set, obviously, for a lot of morning golf.
Look at you guys.
Our scorecard show with Mr. Wags from Scotland might have him eat some haggis or something. We'll be on Big CBS. They're putting us on the network Sunday at 3 Eastern. We will see you then, and we'll be back to recap it on Tuesday.
Podcasts. Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.